Hi, welcome to Days and Wild Big Game Hunting Podcast, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. Going to be releasing this episode as a bonus episode. Unfortunately, I had Travis McClendon on with us of Arizona Strip Guides and Arizona Elk Hunts, or Elk Guides, rather. He shared with us a couple of stories, and for some reason, the first 20 minutes of our podcast did not record. So I'm going to release the end portion of this, and we're going to get him back on a little later in the season here and do a full podcast with him. So, but there's some good tidbits on this last couple stories and some of our discussion here about hunting elk in Arizona.
Aggressive he is. Now, if I give a cow call or a bugle and he responds over me and he's super aggressive, then yeah, let's hold off a little bit and see what this elk's going to do. But 9 out of 10 times, especially right hunting, like 9 and 10 and, 7 west and unit 8 on the western side of the state there, these elk are going to bed. They'll bugle, but they're not going to turn around and leave 10 cows and come find out where you're at. But, you know, that doesn't happen anymore as much as it used to. So you have to get creative on how you're going to chase these elk and get them before they get to the bedding area and shut up. So one of the things that I've learned that works really well is if you have a guide that can definitely hunt on his own and notice how to score an elk. Cause a lot of guys, what I hunt in the trophy hunts, you know, they do have an expectation of size, but you can't leave a guy alone if he doesn't know how to score a bull. Because right. He's going to shoot an elk and then he's going to be like, dang, why did I shoot that elk? So, but one of the things that worked really good is elk do three things really well, right? Their smelling is, they never doubt their smelling ever. If they smell anything funky going on, they never doubt that they're gone. They don't sit there and smell something weird and hang out. Like if they smell you, they're gone.
Right.
That's the one thing they never doubt. So smell is definitely number one. Everybody knows that when it comes to elk, because you got to always have the wind right. And then the sight and the sound. The sound you can get away with a little bit, especially in the rut, because they do think that it could be another elk and they don't get as nervous, or cattle or whatever, especially out in Arizona. And so that's okay. And then the sight, you know, how many times have you've been caught by a cow? She looks at you for 30 to 60 seconds and she goes back to feeding. Not all the time, but if you stand still enough, they'll doubt their sight. Right. But what I'm trying to do when I'm doing it is I'm trying to avoid those three things. So the smell, we get the wind right in our face, we're following these elk, that's not going to be a problem if we have the wind right. And most of the time they walk with the wind. The second thing is on the sight is trying to stay out of sight, coming in behind them, right? Because, you know, the lead bull is probably going to be in the back. He's going to be pushing the cows typically. And so you're following, you're chasing bugles. And the third thing is the sound. So I always try to wear, so if we get in close within 200 yards of an elk that's bugling pretty good, I'll put my sneaky feet on. I'll put the sneaky feet on the hunter. If I have the wind right and I can put the sneaky feet on, I get rid of the sound, 90% of the sound. All I have to worry about is not getting caught, right? Not getting seen. So what I found to work really well, and when they're bugling and they're pushing their cows to the bedding area, is I will send my hunter either to the left or the right. I will send him off and I will have him basically get even with him. Like try to listen to the bull. I'll be in the back position and I want you to go around and try to walk with them. But I want you to do it off to the side 30 or 40 yards.
Okay.
And because what happens a lot of times, the cows will be being pushed with the herd bull, and I'll be cow calling or bugling right behind him. And he's looking behind me. The cows are looking behind me. I've pulled all the attention of the cows. So if he can be quiet, he will get in there and he will be able to walk with them with me taking the attention.
Okay.
And that's worked so many times, especially when they won't. Like that bull will stop and he'll bugle and he'll mill around and wait for me to catch up. Like if I was a cow, he's waiting for me. So the cows are his herd cows lead, or the lead cows leading out. The herd bull's in the back and he's waiting for me because I'm cow calling to him and he's answering me. And if I get that scenario set up where he won't come in, I will send my hunter and flank him either to the left or the right, whatever the wind dictates. And I'll tell him, I said, you got to get to that bull where you think he's, you're side by side to him, and I'll keep him distracted. And you can even get in front of him. As long as you're quiet, he won't catch your movement because he's concentrating on me. So that I found out to, that's one of the things that lately, the last 5 or 6 years that I've done that worked really well. If you have a guy who knows, you know, how to hunt.
Right. Yeah.
That doesn't work with rookie, you know, guys who don't know how to score, or don't, you know, or first time archery hunters are pretty green. They can't, you can't really leave them like that. But if you have somebody who's seasoned, it works really well.
Do you, so if you got a guy that's green, let's go with that scenario for a minute. What, and you're faced with that situation, you're chasing, you know, you're behind the herd, they're moving towards bed, in the morning, and you know, you're getting pretty late in the morning and they're going to get to a spot where they're going to shut up. What are some of the things that you're doing at that point?
If a guy that I can't leave, a hunter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or if you're solo hunting, let's say, you know, hey, let's put it like this. We're, if you can't leave a hunter, you're basically solo hunting because there's two of you, right?
Right.
So what are you doing in that situation?
That's a tough one because I hate to solo hunt.
So do I.
I know it puts more smell in the woods, and I know it puts more movement and makes things louder, but I hate to solo hunt just because when I'm doing bugle, I don't like to be pinpointed, and that's just a peripheral preference for me as an outfitter and a guide. I don't like to give up my position or even let them know I'm there unless I have to. Mm-hmm. And depends on the terrain I'm hunting in, but a lot of times if that bull will bugle on his own, I won't do anything.
Okay.
And I'll try to get in as close as I freaking can, especially if I have eyes on them. In the pine trees, you can kind of get away with that because you can kind of see them. I like to hunt the cedars where you can't see very far in front of you because I think you can close the gap. But that's what I try to do. Like, I try not to call at all. If he's bugling on his own, I will sneak until I can get in behind him and shoot him. That's my number one, always.
Okay.
Because as soon as you give up your position, guess where they're looking?
Yeah, right, of course.
Yeah, they're focused on you.
Of course.
And, you know, if it comes in and you're all set up and he comes in within shooting range and gives you a lane, that's great. Everyone wins. But, man, that just doesn't happen that often anymore. So my position when I have a guide or a client with me that I don't want to leave is, as long as that elk will bugle enough to where I can track him and, like, I can locate him. The problem is when they don't bugle very much, right? He bugles once and he waits 2 minutes or 3 minutes to bugle again, and now he went another 150 yards.
Right.
And you're like, dang, because then you don't want to bump him, and you're not sure exactly how far he's in front of you. But if they can bugle consistently, I try to get in as close as I can, get eyes on him, and pull back and shoot him. That's personal, my preference. Mm-hmm. So if I have somebody green, that's what we're going to try to do. If it's not bugling a lot, I'll do a cow call or I'll do a bugle and see how he responds. I like to try to do a cow call. I try to get within 150 yards of what I think he is, and then lay a real aggressive cow call on him right away and get his attention.
When you say real aggressive cow call, what?
Well,
what kind of sounds?
I do the diaphragm. Mm-hmm. I have diaphragms. I don't do any of the mouth calls. As far as you know, blow into
the open reed stuff. Yeah, I don't either.
Yeah. Yeah, I do all the diaphragm calls, and so I have a couple different ones that sound like a calf or sound like a cow, but I'll do one that's like a lost aggressive cow because I want his attention and I want him to know that I want him, and that's all based on the elk's personality. Mm-hmm. Every elk will have a different personality, and every elk will have a different aggression. I mean, some guys, you know, sometimes I've been there where I'll rake a tree and that elk will freaking run in and like want to fight me. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I say, well, I'll rake a tree and the elk will run off like a scared schoolboy.
Yeah.
I mean, you just never know.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You don't want to look like that guy if you have clients, right? You rake the tree and then you don't hear from the elk again or whatever. That's just one example. But if I have a client, I'm always going to try to sneak in. And if he's not bugling enough where I feel like I'm going to bump him, then I'll throw a cow call. And if I'm praying that he answers that cow call. And if he does, I'm like, okay, we got something going. Like now I can locate him. I can cow call. He'll answer me. And if he answers me, then I can pinpoint him and I'll make my next move. I might need to go another 30 yards and then listen. Now I'm listening for him. Okay, I think he's 100 yards. So I might try to get another 20 yards and cow call again. It just all depends on how much they're talking. But I'm always playing a game of cat and mouse. Rarely ever do I try to set up. I do it. But where I hunt, those elk, they walk. I mean, they're like, once they beeline for a bedding area, very rarely are you just going to be able to turn around and have them come back to you. So I'm always trying to play a cat and mouse, be super quiet, get behind them, and try to get a shot getting behind them. And when they do get to their bedding area, they'll start milling around. Mm-hmm. And if he's still bugling, that's the best, because then he's not moving. Like, right. He hasn't laid down yet, but he's just stopped, and he's waiting for the cows to lay down and find a spot, and he'll continue bugling. That, to me, is good, because then I can pinpoint where he's at, and I can try to get in and get it, you know. And in those cedar trees, you can try to, you know, go from tree to tree to tree and get close enough where you can get a shot.
Right, right.
But if I'm by myself, that's the way I do it. I mean, sometimes I'll get around. Sometimes I've gone, the other thing I like to do is go all the way around. So I'll get completely out of hearing shot of them because I want to go in front of them.
Okay.
And sometimes they're going to do a crosswind, and sometimes they'll go dead in the wind. And what I do is I'll walk all the way in front of him, and I'll get what I think 300-400 yards, where I think if I've been following for a while and I know where they're going, I'll try to get 300 yards in front of them and set up right there, and I can hear them getting closer. And then I try to play the wind. If the wind's blowing down to my right, I'll go right. And it's so funny. I never drop calls, ever. I drop calls. But anyway, I try to get, you know, I'll try to get in front of them. I know the wind's blowing at my back, but what I'm trying to do is get far enough in front of them where they can't smell me, and then choose which way I need to go off to the side.
Okay.
So we did that in Unit 8 a couple years ago. This bull had 50 cows with him. Mm-hmm. There was cows everywhere. Like, you couldn't even get close to him. So I just went all the way. I went around with my hunter, got all the way in front where I thought he was walking up the side of this mountain, and we got completely in front of him, and I just sat there and waited. Okay. For them to come to me, and I could hear them getting closer and closer, and I knew the wind was not good. So as they got closer, I just walked off to the side. I got downwind of them, just, and they walked right freaking by me and never even knew we were there. It was a good bull, but he was broken on the side. We didn't shoot him, but we could have. In those scenarios, that works too.
See, I've never tried to get around. Well, I shouldn't say never. Never is not a good word, but I don't usually try to get around the herd. I just feel like I can never get in front of them fast enough unless I'm on top of a ridge and they're working a ridge below me.
Yeah.
Like, I had that same scenario this past season with my early archery hunter, and we were on this ridge, and it was kind of like a, you know, like one of those Sky Island ridges. It was just a little standalone ridge. And we were at the top. We were actually in the saddle of the two. And I can hear the elk moving below us, and I knew that we could cut across the top fast enough to get to where they were going, because they were like circling around the hill, basically. Like, so I've done that many times. And hike out in a Cedar Flats or something like that. I've never even tried it. I always feel like they're moving so damn fast that it, you know, unless I'm like
they
doing
do.
An all-out sprint.
You do. You have to sprint, and you have to have the right hunter. If you don't have a hunter who can keep up with you,
yeah,
it won't work. They move too fast. So that scenario is, I don't do it a lot, but in those scenarios when you can't get into the bull because he's surrounded by cows, you know, I just tried to get in front of him, and I've done that a couple times, and it's actually worked really well. The problem with that is you don't have the wind fully in your face, and if mm-hmm. it swirls at all, or if a cow drops down or drops around and you have, you know, there's 20 cows or 30 cows and they're starting to mingle around, they'll pick you up, you know. So it's very aggressive, and you have to be very lucky. And that's why I tell guys, you know, I'm going to run bulls off. Right. I'm going to be more aggressive than probably – because there's so many scenarios over the years with my buddies and me, and it's hard hunting with my buddies sometimes because they'll just sit back and sit back and sit back, and then it's 9 o'clock in the morning and elk are done bugling.
Right.
I'm like, we didn't even like come close to getting a shot because you weren't aggressive. You just sat back and were scared of getting caught, which I get on one hand, but like, we have to try to make things happen sometimes. Right. And if we, you know, if we bump them, we bump them. We'll catch back up, or we'll get on some more elk. But like, you, sometimes you just, it's like the difference between sitting in a water hole and going out and chasing bugles, right? You're mm-hmm. sitting in a water hole, you have to have that elk's got to come to you. If he doesn't come to you, you have zero chance.
Right.
So I would rather go out and chase bugles and make something happen and be a little more aggressive. And I'm not always aggressive, but man, I've just been with so many of my friends and so many clients where they just sit and sit and sit, and we never even came close to shooting an elk.
Yeah. No, I could see that. You know what it is too, though, especially if you got guys coming from out of state that have elk experience. Elk hunting, so I've hunted Oregon, Colorado, Idaho, Utah. It's completely different here. And I hunted in New Mexico. New Mexico is about the only place that's similar to here that I've, at least I've only been elk hunting there once, so I don't really have a whole lot of experience there. But they don't understand that 10 o'clock in the morning, everything shuts up thing. Like,
right.
Like my buddies that I've been learning, you know, to hunt Roosevelts with, they don't even go out till 9 o'clock in the morning. And I'm like, what are you doing? Why aren't we out before the sun comes up? Like, what's going on? But he's like, because their idea is they want the elk to get to where they want to be, and then they're not moving anymore because they will respond. Right. They will respond to you. Like, I have a couple of little tricks that I use to get bulls to sound off in the middle of the day, but it doesn't always work. It's not it's not 100%. So, you know, you got to strike while the iron's hot, right? So they're bugling in the morning while they're moving. And it's always a constant, it's a constant chase catch up game.
And lately, the last 4 or 5 years, if they bugle to 10, that's a dang good morning.
Right? I mean, exactly.
Usually by 7:30, 8 o'clock, it's over.
Yeah. It's been rotten. I'm not sure what is the cause of it. I know I'm curious to see that this year that we have a lot of moisture, if that changes anything.
Right.
Of course, a lot of it depending on the weather, the actual temperature too. You know, I don't know if we're going to have a cool September or not, but shit, last year was hot as freaking balls. I was in a higher elevation unit, we were pretty much over 7,000 feet the whole time. So it wasn't like I was, hunting 5,000 feet or whatever. I don't know. I don't know what it is, but I noticed that too. I think back to my first few elk hunts here in Arizona when I was a kid, especially, and I had cow tags, and man, I felt like I was just like, I could go out there and slam a car door. It was like shot gobbling turkeys, I could get, bulls, I could get a bull to answer back. Like, and I just, the experience has just gone so like downhill in my opinion as to what it used to be. I mean, like, listen, we still got the genetics, we still got great bulls, but the actual hunting experience is not what it like.
No,
I
totally agree.
I used to think that, like, we were super spoiled, and now I go to other places where back in the day where I thought was tough hunting, and it's almost better, Like, it's weird. It's weird.
Well, we do have the size. Last year was a great antler growth year. I was in unit 9 hunting. I mean, we might not, there was several mornings I didn't even hear a bugle.
Yeah.
And it's, it's touch and go on those. And of course, it was really dry. The cows did not look healthy. Terrible. I think Mother Nature kind of shuts the rut down. I think they rutted way later. I know they were bugling in November when more rain came in. And so I don't think there was much of a rut at all last year because of how dry it was. I think this year will be much different. We've had a lot of monsoons. They're going to be great feeds, so they'll have enough time here to fatten up. And I think, I'm hoping, crossing my fingers, and also that they got up pretty early. Mm-hmm. And I think, if they would move that back a week and consistently move it back a week on the archery hunt, I think you'd see a lot better bugling. But man, back in the day, I mean, just in the 2000, early 2000s, late 1990s, I mean, those elk would go into frenzies. Mm-hmm. Like, you would see dust coming out from the cedar trees where bulls were fighting and they were running cows off, and you would get in the middle of that and there could be 4 or 5 herd bulls going off. I mean, satellite bulls trying to run elk. I mean, it was a circus, and it was the best experience ever. And like, that just doesn't happen anymore. Like,
nope.
They bugle and go to bed. Like, and I know they fight, and I know they break antlers, but those giant frenzies, they just don't, I haven't seen them as much, nearly as much. I mean, we used to do video elk fighting, and that was not as rare. And now it is. So something's going. I don't know if it's, you know, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's a season or because more hunter guys hunt. I know
there's definitely more tags too. So like
there's more tags.
Yeah, more tags, and another, wasn't there? Didn't they add another season since then? Like so, it's just more pressure, more consistent pressure. You know,
right?
So I don't know. It's a little disheartening, you know. And I don't want to downplay Arizona elk hunting because it's still Arizona. It's still the place to be, you know. But in comparison, it's definitely not what it was, and it's upsetting.
Well, I get these guys booking 7-day hunts, and I'm like, oh, you know, in the back of my mind, I'm like, and it's not long enough. You haven't been out here experiencing it, and you need to give this thing all 14 days,
right?
Because there could be in a 7 days, 3 days, we don't hear a bull. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's how weird it can get. And one day they'll go off and they're bugling. You're like, okay, it's on. Like tomorrow we'll have a chance. And you get up there the next day and you hear three bugles three times and nothing after that. And you have this high expectation because they were doing so good the day before. And so it's just ebbs and flows on these 14-day archery hunts that you just don't know when they're going to go off or not. So you just need to be there. Like I tell guys, if you've been waiting to draw, you need to go all 14 days. Like you need to take advantage of every day because you just don't know when the day is going to be when you get it. And the rut's not strong enough day by day for you not to be out here every day of the season.
You had said something about the not having a lot of, you know, Mother Nature basically shutting down the rut. I did a study when I was in school on mule deer, and I started watching it more closely here in, you know, in Phoenix area. That every time we had a dry winter, the mule deer rut was nowhere near as intense. And then I started, you know, paying attention, you know, to guys talking about the elk hunts and stuff like that. And since then, like, I noticed that when it's a dry during the season and leading up to the season, if it's really bad, the intensity of the rut is not there. So not as many, what happens, you know, obviously the rut is dictated by how many cows or when we talk about deer, does coming into estrus. And that's what gets the bulls fired up. If there's not cows and estrus around, they're not going to get fired up. There's no reason for them to get fired up.
Right.
You know, that's why you see them lip curling and phlegming and all that other stuff, because that scent is what triggers their desire to breathe and fight, right, and all that, and, you know, all that stuff. So, it's definitely weather related. It's definitely, moisture related to some extent.
Well, I always think, you know, if the cows can't give birth, right, 'cause they're not healthy enough, mm-hmm, then maybe they don't come into estrus, and, you know, or maybe they can't carry a calf, you know. So
right,
it's one of those things where I think it is a Mother Nature, because they're not healthy. And when there's no water, and we're hauling in water in places like Unit 9, because there's hardly any feed and all the water's gone, they're not going to be healthy.
No.
So I do think there's something hand in hand that's going on there. And I'm not no scientist. I'm not saying that's exactly what happens, but there is some correlation for sure.
Yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt. Well, cool. I want to thank you for coming on and sharing your knowledge with us. Where can our listeners find out more about you and some of the stuff you got going on?
Well, they can go to ArizonaElkOutfitters.com is the outfitting company. And then we also have, for those guys who want to come out and hunt with us, or in states like Nevada, Utah, New Mexico, and Arizona, we offer a zero guide fee membership, which we didn't mention earlier, but a zero guide fee is basically, it's just what it says. There's no guide fees with our membership plan, and you can hunt in all four states, and when you get drawn, zero guide fees will pay for your hunt with the outfitter of your choice. And it's just a kind of like a co-op, maybe like car insurance. It's you pay $350 a year to become a member. And once you become a member, we'll help you get applied. We'll help you get drawn. And when you get drawn, we'll pay for your guided hunt. So it's just a better, less expensive, kind of like a blue collar way to do things. So if you do want to go with an outfitter, you want to maximize that tag that you drew, rather that's Arizona, Nevada, Utah, New Mexico. Mm-hmm. As long as you become a member and you get signed up before you draw that tag, when you get drawn, we will hook you up with an outfitter in all the other states. Arizona will guide you, but all the other states will hook you up with an outfitter and we'll pay for it. So it's just a really good system. So that's zeroguidefees.com. If you guys have any more questions about that, you can do it that way. So it's a little, saves you some big dollars doing it that way. But if not, you can always do traditional guiding with Arizona Elk Outfitters and look us up. And we got a new show coming out called The Guide Life. You can look us up on YouTube. It's The Guide Life with Travis McClendon. And you guys can subscribe. And we, our first show is launching August 20th, which is what, about 18, 17 days? Mm-hmm. And that'll be our first episode. We're probably going to do 5 or 6 episodes up leading up till next year. And we've started videoing 2 years ago. So we're hopefully going to bring this, you know, we video the experiences of our Zero Guide Fee members that we pay for their hunts. We video their experience on their hunts. And hopefully guys that see that would want to become members and have that same experience when they draw. So that's the whole purpose and plan for the show and the membership. So
awesome. Well, again, thank you for coming on and hope you have a good season and see if I'll catch up with you after the season, see how things went.
Yeah, let's hook back up and we'll have some good bulls and bucks on the ground and that'd be good to get back together and see how we did.
Sounds good. All right,
buddy. All right, Jeff. Thanks.
Bye. Bye. Well, that's it for this episode. Thanks for tuning in. Be sure to check out daysinthewild.com and be sure to give us a review on iTunes. Thank you, and we'll check you out on the next episode.